Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Oh, Senator Daley.
You're not on so TV, good. You know. So.
That's all right. That's all right.
Senator Metzen, heads up.
Mr. Chairman.
You got the mirror? You got your mirror?
No mirror, but we have our breath spray over here. I don't know how that fits into the conversation.
Well, good morning, members of the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. So, thank you for your flexibility on schedules, given the fact that we had our kickoff of session on Tuesday. That made it tough to have a committee meeting on Tuesday. Yesterday, we had the One Minnesota Conference, so this was the only time that really worked for us to do something in the first week. And we've got a lot of work to do, and we've got a lot of work we want to do. So wanted to make sure we at least had a start at being together during the first week of session. So next week we'll be back on the more traditional Tuesday-Wednesday timeline. I do think going forward we may need to schedule more than two meetings a week. We'll see what the workload looks like, but it's going to be a short and intense session, and I think that can be very good, but hopefully there's going to be a lot of work before us. There's going to be a lot of work that has to do with the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. So it would not be right for me to start this meeting without acknowledging our newest member, Senator Dziedzic. Welcome.
Thank you.
I want to make sure I say that right, Dziedzic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe for your benefit and the benefit of others, we could go around the table. Senator Tomassoni is always a great place to lead off, but just an introduction.
She knows us. Yeah.
Senator Tomassoni, well, she doesn't know all of us. She doesn't know all of us. And let's just
David Tomassoni from Chisholm on the Iron Range, and Senate District 5. Has this always been? Did we change the name of the committee to Economic Growth this year? Was it Economic Growth last year? Or was it Economic
Senator
Development? Tomassoni,
I know last year was a tough year for you with your medical issues, yeah. But I thought your mental powers were stronger than ever.
I'm checking because it seems to me it was Economic Development last year.
Yeah, we're still the same name.
Good. All right.
Senator Howe.
John Howell from Red Wing. I represent from Red Wing down to the population side of my good friend, the very good friend, Senator Miller in Winona, and then over to
doesn't say that privately.
And then over to no, you guys weren't there at the state chamber meeting, you know.
Yeah,
didn't you see what the governor said? You guys got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My very good friend, Senator Miller. But Senate District 28, and so I live in Red Wing.
You mentioned you were the former mayor of Red Wing.
Many people don't know this. Many people don't know this, and I don't like to share it, but I used to be the former mayor of Red Wing.
Don't like to share it. Senator Miller.
Good morning. Jeremy Miller from Winona, representing District 31, which is Winona, Houston, Fillmore counties.
Jim Metzen, South St. Paul, and Ms. Dziedzic is my seatmate on the floor.
Great.
She'll have a good voting record. Well, I don't know.
Well, so Senator Metzen, you've had a big upgrade in seatmates.
Senator Lilly. With Garcia, Paul, Woodbury.
Yeah. Yeah, Senator Lilly's actually the vice chair of the committee, so it's good to see that he's on time. Emily, do you want to just mention your role with the committee?
Emily Pugh. I'm the committee legislative assistant.
Amy Berger, I'm the committee administrator.
And I'm Senator Jeff Michelle, and I represent Edina and West Bloomington.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Dan Mickelberg, Senate Majority Staff.
Good morning, Senator. My name is Carlin Doyle Fontaine, and I'm Senate Counsel for this committee.
Good morning, and welcome to our committee. I'm Ted Daley, State Senator from Eagan.
Good morning, Senator. I welcome you to the committee. I'm Senator Al DeCry from Le Sueur County, representing Senate District 25.
And I'm Carrie Dziedzic, representing Senate District 59, which is Northeast Minneapolis, Southeast Minneapolis, and Cedar Riverside. So thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm Senator Ken Kielash. I represent District 63, Southwest Minneapolis, Richfield, and East Bloomington.
John Peterson, the senator from St. Cloud, also representing Waite Park, Rockville, and St. Augusta.
Good morning. I'm Carla Nelson. I live in Rochester. Also represent Chatfield, Dover, Yoda, Elgin, Plainview, and Stuartville. Good chair of Olmsted County, a bit of Wabasha.
Dave Jensen, the fiscal staff for the committee.
Well, thanks to all of you. And Senator Dietzick, I think you've already got a sense that you can have some fun here. Still be pretty serious, and we can even have some debate once in a while, right, Senator Metzen?
That's right.
That's right. So
we usually lose them, but we. That's kidding.
Brutal honesty.
We're family.
Senator Dietzick, you're going to enjoy your seatmate this year.
Family.
And you might enjoy a little separation from him during your committee time. But thank you and welcome. And I hope this is your favorite committee. So members, going forward, I don't expect this morning's meeting to go past 10:30. We're going to need to be out of this room by then. What we wanted to do today was, I guess, kind of set the table to talk about jobs and economic growth with Mr. Hine, who's now a friend of the committee. And so we'll hear from him as far as kind of the latest state jobs picture, how we're doing on employment and unemployment. And then a group of us. It changed over time during the summer and the fall, but we made a number of road trips over the course of that time, and a couple of the places that we were in included St. Cloud and Eagan. And so we're going to hear from a couple of folks that portions of the committee met with and get their perspective again on the economy. And I think kind of most critically and the most basic question for this committee is what can the state do to help? What can the state do right now? What can the state legislature do this session to help, particularly with private sector job growth? There's nothing partisan or red or blue about that question, and that is the question that will be before this committee every time we convene. So that's kind of the tone that we wanted to help start with this morning's meeting. And all three of these witnesses, I know, are open to some questions and discussion, so let's take advantage of that. Unless there's any other comments at the front end. Senator Kielash, you look like you had...
Mr. Chair, I don't recall getting any invite to do these road trips. But.
Well, you did, Senator Kielash. Let's do some more. That would be another point.
I need to get it either. Okay, just curious as to how that was...
I know Senator Metzen did.
One of them, yeah.
And...
St. Cloud.
Yeah, so we'll hear from Mm-hmm. We'll hear an update as to what those folks were saying, and I do think that's another thing that we could consider during this short session is if there's anywhere else the committee should go, you know, besides meeting in room 107, is there another place we should take the committee, people to see, businesses or enterprises to tour? So we're open to that. Senator Lilly, we've already taken your name in vain and.
Ouch.
Apologize for that. Mostly it was Metzen. So,
of course, my good friend.
Team, family, whatever we know.
So, Mr. Hine, that's probably tough to follow all this chit-chat up here, but welcome to the committee, and we'll hand over the microphone to you for now.
Thank you, Senator Michelle, and thank you, members of the committee, for the chance to come in right at the get-go while everybody's still in a jovial mood, maybe. I hope nothing I say changes that. But I do appreciate the chance to come in and give you sort of a 15-minute overview on what the economy has looked like over the past couple of years, what situation we find ourselves in now, and what we might expect to see in the near term down the road. By way of introduction.
Excuse me, Mr. Hine, I just want to make sure members know. So a copy of his PowerPoint is in your packet. So,
Mr. Chairman, I see that. Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Torres-Ray, yeah. you slid in as well. Senator Torres-Ray, I'll give you and Senator Lilly the same opportunity that we just went around the committee table in honor of and to introduce ourselves to our newest member, Senator Dietzick. So, Senator Torres-Ray, I don't know if you just want to do a quick name and district and any other opening remarks you might want to have, but we all went around the table once and want to give you a chance to do that too.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to be back and welcome, Senator. Where are you? Yes. Welcome. We're neighbors. Our districts share a lot of things in common, and so I'm looking forward to work with you, with your community. I just really appreciate the diversity that exists in your community and have many, many good friends, so I look forward to work with you.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. Senator Lilly, do you want to try to correct any impressions that are already on the record?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Disick, welcome. Welcome. We're very glad and honored to have you joining us, and this is a great committee. We're talking about jobs in the economy and how to put people back to work, how to grow this economy, and hopefully this session we'll be able to find a number of ways that we can all work together to help the residents of Minnesota. So welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Metzen, for noting that. And Mr. Hine.
Thank you very much. My name is Steve Hine. I'm the research director at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I head up the Labor Market Information Office, which is the state entity responsible for producing employment and unemployment data, providing analysis and economic research. To start my overview of the economy, I think this chart is always a good place to start. This illustrates the employment level over the last decade, over the course of two prior recessions and recovery, and what we have going now as a recovery. It clearly shows the magnitude of the recent recession, the fact that both the state and the nation lost more than the jobs they were able to add during the previous expansion. I think another takeaway from this chart to keep in mind is that there's a very close correlation between our job growth and decline and the nation's. We can see that the recent recession wiped out all those jobs, as I mentioned. But since beginning to turn up in September 2009, both the state and the nation have increased employment by 1.7%. But in order to regain our previous peak, we clearly have a long way to go. About 113,000 more jobs would be needed to regain that previous peak, which at the recent rate of about 1,700 jobs a month would take a little over 5.5 years to accomplish. So obviously a faster rate of growth would be preferable to the trajectory that we've recently been on. But not only have we begun to add jobs, the jobs that we are adding or the jobs that we have are improving in the sense that they're offering more hours and a higher wage rate on average. That the roughly 8/10 of an hour increase in the average work week translates into roughly 54,000 average time equivalent jobs. That's on top of the 45,600 that we have added since we started gaining those jobs, as I said, in September of 2009. And the $1.12 increase in the average wage rate that we've experienced since early 2010 yields nearly $7 billion a year in private sector wages. So the improvement has really been quite a bit stronger than the job count alone would suggest. As a result, we've witnessed a historically precipitous drop in our unemployment rate recently. Since August, our unemployment rate has fallen from 7.2% to 5.7% last month in December. This 1.5-point drop is the fastest that we have on record, but dating back to 1976, although at least in part it was attributable to the spike that you can see in the summer months due to the shutdown. We've also now achieved a 2.8-point advantage over the nation. The national rate in December was 8.5%. That 2.8-point advantage is also the largest that we have on record dating back over 35 years. So again, by the measure of official unemployment, we're not yet back to pre-recessionary levels, but we are back to where we were in September of 2008 when the financial meltdown that occurred at that time really put the national and state economy into a tailspin. Now, of course, That is based on the official measurement of unemployment. That is a person that has no job and is actively seeking work. This can understate the true degree of slack in our labor market quite substantially, as this chart illustrates. If we add those people that have stopped actively searching for one reason or another, and we add those that are working part-time, not out of choice, but out of the economic conditions, the level of unemployment is still roughly double what we report as the official level. And furthermore, while the number of officially unemployed has dropped by about 40,000 over the past 2 years, the number of discouraged workers and marginally attached workers has actually increased by 2,700 and 400 respectively there. And the part-time workers that would prefer full-time has declined by only 2,800. So there's been little improvement then in the unofficial unemployment, that additional labor market slack beyond just those officially unemployed. So while recently job gains have understated our improvement, some of this decline in our official unemployment rate may be overstating it.
And Mr. Hine, while you're on that slide, I have Senator Kelash.
Mr. Hines, I'm not familiar with the term marginally attached. Could you give me a definition of what that means?
Yes, Senator. Thank you. These are people that have expressed an interest in working, would take a job if one were offered to them, but for reasons other than discouragement over their job prospects, have not met that actively seeking work. Common reasons for this might be transportation issues, childcare issues, that sort of thing. So they are people that are very interested in being at work, but have not met that actively seeking requirement over the last 4 weeks.
Just to follow up, they're not attached to anything really then. So the definition seems like, are they working sporadically or how's that?
They are attached to the workforce in the sense that they would work were a job available. But it's marginal because they haven't met that actively seeking.
Okay.
It's terminology that's been around for ages, and you're probably right that it perhaps isn't as clear as another word, but that's what that means.
Thank you.
Okay. I have Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure if we were going to ask questions during the presentation, so Mr. Hines, if I could just back you up a slide. I had a quick question about the slide that showed the hourly wage. Do you recall off the top of your head, does that include their health and benefit packages as well, or is it just strictly the hourly wage?
Mr. Hines.
Senator, no, thank you for asking. No, this is just wages.
Thank you.
These are the wages that are reported to be paid to the individuals, and this is just private sector employment.
Okay. Senator Nelson.
Just on the definitions, would you define that actively seeking? If someone's in actively seeking, what does that mean exactly?
Thank you,
Senator.
Are
they on unemployment insurance?
It does mean there's a list of about 12 options and then an other category. But it does require that a person do more than, say, peruse websites over a cup of coffee in the morning. They need to have gone to a workforce center. They need to have submitted resumes, gone for interviews, but it's one of the concerns that has been expressed about the official definition is the fairly stringent requirements that the definition put on a person to be considered actively seeking and therefore officially unemployed.
Just a comment.
Senator
on
Nelson.
That. I do think that's a legitimate concern. I'm sure there's a number of young college kids who you have no record of how many resumes they've sent out. They might not have gone to a workforce center. They might not at all be in our database.
Yes, Senator.
The
numbers are based on a monthly survey of households, of individuals. They are asked that question, have you actively searched for work during the previous 4 weeks? And if yes, describe what steps you have actively taken. So it is up to the interviewer
to interpret that as qualifying as active search or not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Daley.
Thank you,
we're giving you a little break here, Mr. Hine. These guys get rolling pretty quick here. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, Mr. Hine. To clarify, these average hours per week and the average hourly wage, is that U.S. or Minnesota?
These, Senator, thank you. These are Minnesota levels.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senator, is it Tomasoni?
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Should I turn it around this way, Mr. Chairman? thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hine, I thought I heard you say on the official unemployment page, it's only part of the story, that this is double of what we officially report. Did I hear you say that?
Thank you, Senator. Yes, the by that official definition of having no job and actively seeking, this chart presents an annual average over the last 12 months. For December, the official number of unemployed Minnesotans, the official estimate, is 167,000. Over the course of the last 12 months, it's averaged 190,000. But then there's 192,000, so very close to double, that would be considered at least underemployed in the case of the part-time workers that would prefer full-time. And then you could add those 36,000 individuals that have a desire to work, but either through discouragement or through other impediments to actively seeking work, did not meet this requirement that the official number requires of a person.
So is our unemployment rate really 12% and not 6%?
Mr. Hine.
Yes, what's referred to as U6, a broader measure of unemployment, would be, I think it was right around 12% in December. I don't have that number in front of me, but it would be very roughly double current 5.7%.
So what's the rationale then for not reporting people who are not working?
Mr. Hine, I think we're getting into the definitions, and some of them are federal, some of them are state, but help out Mr. Senator Tomasoni here.
Yes, Senator Tomasoni. I'm sorry, why do we not report?
Yeah, it looks like we actually have twice as many people unemployed as what we actually report.
That is very much the case, that those national unemployment rate figures that came out, 8.5% in December, is
actually 17%.
Is one of six different measures of unemployment that are actually calculated. They are actually reported each month, but the attention has been focused on that sort of median rate that defines an unemployed person as in the way that I've mentioned. The other numbers are available. We have started producing in the last year similar data for the state. But it remains the case that for decisions predating my time in this position, that official rate is defined as the one that classifies an individual as unemployed if they don't have any work and are actively seeking.
And, Mr. Chairman, and that's based on your telephone surveys?
Mr. Hine.
Senator, there's initially an actual visit in person where the survey is described to an individual that has been chosen to be included in this survey, and then there's a follow-up via phone in subsequent months.
Right.
It's called the Current Population Survey.
Well done, Mr. Hine.
Thank you.
We're going to keep you on your toes.
okay, so what we've been describing so far is the unemployment situation that's faced by the overall population. Subsets of the population are often experiencing quite different outcomes. By this chart, you can see, for example, that African Americans and teens have been especially hard hit by the recent recession, with unemployment rates topping out over 20%, and show little improvement over the last 2 years, even as the rate for whites in the red line down there have steadily diminished.
other groups that we can look at. Now, these are national rates. We're working on developing unemployment rates by educational attainment level. We're not there yet, so I present to you some national numbers. It's commonly known that unemployment is lower with higher educational attainment, but this chart does illustrate that education was not a guarantee that one would not be affected by the recession. In fact, between 2007, when unemployment rates were at their expansionary trough, and last year, the unemployment rate for high school dropouts, the green line there, increased by 97%, very nearly doubled. While the rate for those with at least a four-year college degree, in fact, went up by 114%, more than doubled, and those with some college, including an associate's degree, increased by 124%. So in terms of the magnitude of unemployment and the increase in the number of unemployed people that had less than a high school degree compared to higher education levels, the impact was on those individuals. But relatively speaking, those more highly educated cohorts were, in a sense, hit just as hard or harder than their less educated counterparts. Other groups that we can point to that have struggled with persistently high unemployment rates are those with disabilities and those that have served in active military duty since 9/11. These, again, are national data. They're relatively new, so they only go back to 2008. We can't really look at the behavior of these unemployment rates during the expansion, but they do. They are both groups that are experiencing unemployment rates that are well above the current national unemployment rate of 8.5%, and neither of these groups have really exhibited much improvement over the last 2 years. Now, back to signs of future trends. One very strong sign for our economy is the number of people that are filing for receiving or exhausting unemployment benefits, which are good indicators of the pace of layoffs and a good signal of likely future employment change. The total initial claims, new claims being filed for unemployment, that's the red line in this diagram, was very consistently in the 23,000 to 24,000 a month range during the expansionary years of 2004 through 2006. As of December, this number has now fallen to 23,855. That's its lowest level since May of 2008, and nearly half what it was at its peak in early 2009. A similar story applies to what are called SK claims. The green line here, SK claims are our terminology to refer to claims that are filed by individuals that report a permanent separation, not a furlough or expecting a recall. And while they're still remaining slightly above the 10,000 per month mark that was commonly seen before the recession, they also have fallen to less than half what they were in early 2009. Every Thursday morning, this morning, the national numbers come out on a weekly basis. I have not had an opportunity to see those. But last Thursday, it was announced that nationally the number of new claims being filed fell to 352,000, which is really getting to that magical 350,000 a week mark that many associate with improving job growth. So while those unemployment claims tell us about layoffs, the other side of the employment coin, of course, is hiring. In another indicator of improvement, this chart shows the number of unemployed Minnesotans, that's in red, and the number of online job postings for employment in Minnesota as reported by the conference boards. It's called the Help Wanted Online Index. After having dropped off from around 80,000 before the recession to fewer than 50,000, the number of postings by this measure is now up just shy of 100,000. To put these numbers in another way, there were about 1.5 unemployed people per job posting in mid-2007 before the recession hit. That increased to 5 during the depths of the recession and have now fallen back to 1.7 individuals, unemployed individuals per job opening as of last month. It was also reported in December that Minnesota had the 6th best rate by this measure. 1.7 was the 6th lowest. North Dakota had a rate of less than 1. South Dakota, Nebraska, I think Vermont and Alaska were the other states, which are highly rural states. So by this measure, we are towards the top of the nation. The Twin Cities area, in fact, had the second lowest rate in amongst major metropolitan areas after Washington, D.C., which has its own economy. So by these measures, we do seem to be in a good situation.
Sarah Nelson.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. We were talking about national numbers a moment ago. I just want to clarify. These job openings that are expanding, are these Minnesota numbers then?
Senator, thank you. Yes, these are Minnesota numbers. Mm-hmm. Another indicator of this, every 6 months we survey businesses to estimate the number of job vacancies that are currently open. The Help Wanted Online gives us a monthly aggregate number, but we try to delve into the quality of the jobs and so on. But overall, although it's still preliminary, still finalizing this last number on the chart for the last 3 months of 2011, that number currently stands at 52,902. Although that looks like a drop from 6 months earlier, the spring of 2011, fourth quarter is always lower than second quarter in terms of vacancies. There's seasonality there. So a more appropriate comparison would be to the number of vacancies in the fourth quarter last year to the same period a year earlier. And doing so, there's been a 54% increase, that is, between the third bar and the last bar on this chart. That's by far, by nearly double, the fastest rate of improvement in the number of vacancies that are being reported by businesses in the 10 years or 11 years that we've been conducting this survey. So we do seem to be seeing signs that business hiring is on the increase. As a result, we are now projecting job growth over the next year of 34,000 jobs. That's a 1.3% rate. Again, it's not a spectacular rate by any stretch. There are a number of concerns and impediments, but and I hope we're proven to be wrong. I wanted to mention that last year when I came to the committee, we had a forecast of 28,000. It came in at 26,000. So, right. We did all right. I hope this time we're erring on the side of too low. We are currently, as I say, projecting a job growth rate of 1.3% over the coming year. This chart shows where the last year's jobs and the projected next year's jobs are likely to come from. Again, the healthcare sector continues to be the largest source in absolute terms of new jobs within the economy. Professional business services has been very strong during the expansion, and a lot of these are, it's a very cyclically sensitive area in many respects, and so it's not bad news necessarily that we're projecting a slower rate of growth in that sector for the coming year than we did last year. Temp help jobs, for example, fall into this category. And we've seen a real surge over the last 2 years in temp help jobs. And it would not be surprising. In fact, it might be welcome news to see some of those temp help jobs disappearing from this sector and becoming permanent jobs in one of the other sectors. I would call it a highlight. You can see what we project to happen in construction there. Over the last couple months of 2011, construction employment turned up over the year for the first time since early 2006, when the housing market was really having an impact. We have, in fact, seen strong growth in building construction, up over 11% December 2010 to December 11. Even specialty trades have now turned up over the year, and we project that strength to continue, especially as heavy and civil construction is projected to improve as the summer months approach. Manufacturing has been, I think, a pleasant surprise. After 10 years of losing about 25% of their jobs, manufacturing has been up over the year for the last couple and is projected to continue to do so. The last slide breaks this out into some of the occupational groups. This is the first time in, five, 6 years that we don't project any declines across these major occupational groups, including the construction sector. We anticipate a 2.3% growth rate in jobs in the construction and extraction occupational group. Some of the other faster growing areas would continue to be the healthcare and personal care services. I started off the first slide had a question, are we there yet? This kind of, I want to relate this to my preschooler who, on a trip up north to the cabin, asked if we're there yet, just as we went up the entry ramp onto 35E here in town. We're not there yet. We have a long way to go, but we're heading in the right direction. And there are very few indicators that would point to anything other than that. There are certainly risks to our current situation, but it is my impression from looking at the data that we really have a nice alignment, and I think there's cause for optimism, at least over the next year. Barring a flat tire on the way up to the cabin. So with that, I'll be happy to take any further questions.
Mr. Hine, I just want to confirm a few numbers with you and make sure I have this right. So in 2011, in calendar 2011, Minnesota gained 26,000 jobs. Is that the number we're using?
Senator, yes. 25,345. That's total jobs. Private sector job growth was 31,435.
All right. And then, but you have to, you net that out with a loss of some public sector jobs?
That's right. That's right. Public sector jobs were down over the year by just over 6,000.
So plus 26,000 in 11, and you're projecting a little more than that for 2012, 34,000.
Senator, yes.
A gain of plus 34,000. And then back to your first slide. So even though we're not there yet, even though we're starting to kind of crawl out of this, I'm looking at that graph of total non-farm employment. So we're basically back to 2004. We have the same number of jobs,
Senator,
today,
yes,
as we did in 2004. Yeah.
I mentioned that at the recent rate of improvement, it would take something around 5.5 years.
Yeah.
Increasing our rate of growth to this 34,000 jobs a month, we would regain our pre-recessionary peak towards the end of 2014. So again, it's a long we're a long way from regaining that, even with this improvement that we're forecasting over the next year. It'll still be another 3 years rather than 5.5 before we would regain that prior peak.
I've got Senator Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hines, the chart, Where Will the Jobs Be?, discusses the opportunities for those that are unemployed currently, where should they be seeking. And in a recession, that is probably a good time to be in school if you are unemployed, increasing your training and increasing your education, your ability to find those positions. Are we able to relate back to the charts? And not all the groups are affected equally. Education matters, and the groups that are struggling, are the folks in those categories working to find positions in the same categories that the jobs will be available? Do we have any data that relates those issues together, and are people going in the right direction in Minnesota?
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Hines.
There is rightfully a great deal of concern over the question as to whether we have the right skill set to meet the jobs that will be in demand in the coming months. I would point out on this projection by occupational group that it's not just those areas that are growing in net job terms that provide opportunities. There's an increasing share of job opportunities as we age here that will be filled simply as a replacement. Okay, if you look at this chart, you can see that while we project 34,000 in net job growth, there's 61,000 job opportunities that are projected over the next year simply to fill positions that will be vacated. I'd also point out that while the fastest growing areas include construction and healthcare, in absolute terms, the largest number of job opportunities continues to be in areas like food preparation, sales, office and administrative support. So I don't want to diminish the importance of education and the impact that this recession has had not only on unskilled but very highly skilled individuals. But there does remain a significant need for people to take positions that do not necessarily require a college education.
All right. Senator DeCraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hine, thank you for this. This is it's very insightful, and you know, and where
Senator.
We're at and where we've been. A couple questions I have is, you know, we both have fuzzy crystal balls. But
good that you recognize that.
But looking forward, you know, a lot of people saw the housing bubble come, which kind of started the whole decline in our economy. But currently, what do you see as some of the bigger potential pitfalls that we could be facing? Is there another financial crisis? Is there a, you know, the European markets, you know, we're subject to that somewhat in our own economy? And are there some things that we can do as a state to help insulate ourselves from the effects of some of these potential pitfalls?
Good question. Thank
Mr.
you, Ryan, Senator.
You tackle that in about 90 seconds.
In 90 seconds. Solve the world's problems in 90 seconds. I think you do point out probably the yeah, most significant risk right now, and that is the situation in Europe. It's, I think, anticipated by most that it will be officially declared a recession in Europe. Has already been underway. That is going to have an impact on our exports, an important source of growth in areas within Minnesota like machinery and machinery manufacturing, for example. So there, I think that is on the top of most people's lists as risks. I would have to point to, you know, policy-making challenges as, in some sense, a risk. You know,
taking appropriate actions with regard to the housing market. This skills gap issue and the concern that employers are not being able to find individuals, some of that may be a skills gap. Much of it is an inability of individuals to move from where they don't have a job to where they could get one. And the housing market situation is a huge impediment to that mobility. The situation China, China could experience a difficult time towards the end of next year. And so our trade relationship with China may change. In the long run, there may be advantages to the situation in China in the sense that that cost advantage that is attracting all these jobs is narrowing quite significantly. And we do hear a lot of instances of businesses inshoring or bringing those jobs back. You can't discount things like natural disasters. The tsunami in Japan had a huge impact on the auto industry. Oil prices, the tensions in the Mideast, if we see gasoline prices spike, that'll put already stretched consumers at a disadvantage.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. I was intrigued by the pleasant surprise in the manufacturing sector that had been up a bit, or at least the losses had been stemmed. Mm-hmm. And you might have alluded to this a little bit, but I was wondering what areas of manufacturing are up and what we might attribute that to.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, the strength has really been focused in durables. I mentioned machinery manufacturing and fabricated metal manufacturing. Those have been very strong areas over the last 2 years. There have been moments when medical devices have lagged and then picked up again. Right now, it's the medical supplies manufacturing component is doing well. And we're starting to see some of that rebound associated with a pickup in construction activity in areas like wood products. So those would be a handful of the areas that I would identify as being fairly strong.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Hines, on your not only more jobs but better pay for longer hours, is that broken down so that are the new hires getting paid more? Is that some of what's going on? Are there people working more hours and the increase in wages due to overtime pay, for example? Is that all accounted for in those numbers? Or can you give us just a little more how the numbers are drawn?
So that Senator,
I want to make sure we're comparing apples to apples,
Yeah, thank you. Those numbers themselves do not provide that kind of detail. It comes from the business survey that we conduct each month, and the question is simply, what's your current wage offerings? How many hours are your employees working? So it does not distinguish between recently hired and long tenured employees, overtime or straight time. That is something that I would have to turn to other data sources for, and I don't have an answer at the ready, but mm-hmm. It's something that we could certainly investigate.
Just to follow up quickly, and that is, so because there's a lot of things that can skew these numbers, but they've been taken over time, so I'm not sure that if my concerns are valid, if we're looking at it over a time frame. So I'm just kind of looking statistically. If we're measuring all those numbers equally, maybe they are as valid as that. Or if, in fact, there's something like, somebody's working a lot of overtime or, more construction workers with higher wages come in to start working, that skews the numbers significantly as well, but doesn't really say much about the total economy, right? So.
Thank you, Senator. You're absolutely right. We often see wage increases during a recession. People take that as evidence that, well, in fact, the jobs that are that currently exist are improving, when it's quite often the case that the average increased simply because the lower tail of the distribution got laid off. You know, the newer workers or the less skilled workers may be the first to go. And if you cut off the lower tail, if you lay off the lowest paid of your employees, the average of the remaining workers has increased. So it is necessary to properly interpret this, and you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
At the same time, you know, there does seem to be an improvement by other data sources in the wages that are being paid to individuals over time, a given individual over time.
Good. Okay, thank you.
I have Senator Howe, and then I'm going to ask our other two guests to join us. Mr. Hine has proven himself to be available to this committee and to other members at any point, so
absolutely
feel free to follow up with him in any way and at any time. And Senator Howe.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Hine, in paying attention to the foreign countries like Germany that were concerned about stumbling, and also China, and also paying attention that we could have higher oil and gas prices, is there anything we can do at the state level to minimize what may happen if their economy stumbles or if we have higher gas prices? What should we be paying attention here? How can we best prepare our state to minimize the impacts or the negative impacts that may happen?
Mr. Hine.
Thank you, Senator. You're starting to push me into areas that perhaps are beyond my pay grade. But I would point to that immobility due to the housing market as I think one of the most significant impediments to our ability to grow jobs, to fill the jobs that exist with the best qualified candidates. I think that the best insulation against the impact, the negative impact of shocks like overseas recessions or oil spikes is a strong, vibrant economy, one in which people are confident that if they invest in their workers or invest in training or education, that there will be a job available to them that will reward them appropriately for that. How that is accomplished, again, I will leave to you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Senator Miller pointed out that a lot of these improvements happened when you became chairman or something. Looking at the numbers, he was very observant.
I like to think it happened when you became a ranking minority member.
Well, combination.
Yeah. It's all your work previously.
Yeah, that's right.
That got us going.
Mr. Hine, thank you for joining us again this morning. And let me ask both Ms. Bonin, Teresa Bonin from the St. Cloud Chamber, and Mr. Hyde, why don't you both come to the table now and join us for kind of the last half hour here. And actually, I was going to encourage Senator Howe to ask these two that same question that you just gave Mr. Hine. That same topic, you might get some more specific ideas from these folks. So, Ms. Bonin, we'll start with you. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are. Okay. Thank you, Senator Michelle.
And then maybe Senator Peterson, do you want to introduce Ms. Bonin in any way, since she's from up your way?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, as you can imagine, my company has been a member of the St. Cloud Chamber for many, many years and have admired the work of Teresa Bonin. As she clearly is a leader in our business community, she's been president of the chamber for many years and has been a strong, strong advocate for education as well as business growth in a regional center like St. Cloud. As you can see, our local economy is really on a micro scale, everything that's going on in Minnesota. We have a broad base of manufacturing, strong educational community, as well as professional services that go along with a lot of the business and manufacturing jobs. And it's a pleasure to have her here, and I was grateful for the chance to host the committee in St. Cloud earlier this summer.
Ms. Bonin, welcome to the committee this morning, and I know you have some prepared remarks, but appreciate your hospitality last year, and your perspective on what members of the Senate, members of this particular committee, can do to help you and to help your members.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. And you mentioned the meeting that we had in St. Cloud, as well as with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Executives Group early last spring. And we appreciated the opportunity to meet with several of the committee members and talk about jobs at that time, too. So it's a huge honor to be here in front of the committee and talking with all of you. Many of you are my friends, and I've appreciated working with you over the years. The St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce is has about 1,025 members in the St. Cloud and surrounding area, and that does encompass a total population of about 120,000. So it's St. Cloud and the five contiguous cities around St. Cloud, as well as reaching out even into Cold Spring and about a 30-mile radius of the population center. About 80% of those 1,000 members are 20 or fewer employees, so we truly represent small business. Those 200 that are large business are vitally important to the financial integrity of our chamber, but I think whenever we listen and talk to people, we really pay the greatest amount of attention to those smaller businesses. Just Tuesday morning, we had a new member reception where we welcomed 30 new members and talked about what the chamber could do for them. Of those 30 members, I always ask, how many of you are interested in government and ready to participate in government affairs and want to know more about what our state and federal and local governments are doing to and for your businesses? Three of them had interest in that, about 10%. And that's what we find. So I think it's vitally important for chambers to look out and advocate for those small members, because once things do happen to them, believe me, we hear then. As Senator Michelle mentioned, we had a couple of meetings last summer with the committee. I think that there's signs of economic improvement, strong signs of economic improvement since those meetings. Anecdotally, I peruse the St. Cloud Times ads and other, our chamber has a job bank, other classified ads that are available to me, and there is an increase in the number of ads that are being placed, as well as more people mentioning job vacancies and opportunities that their businesses have available at our networking functions. I kind of keep a file of good people who I know are looking for jobs. It's kind of known in the community, so I hear a lot from our employers. Employers aren't real willing to throw out a general ad because they end up getting 500-600 resumes for one ad, and then they have the whole problem of culling through those on top of trying to do their day-to-day business. So I think there is increased activity just from having been a part of that more informal job network. Having said that, our unemployment rate in the St. Cloud area was higher and has consistently been higher than the Twin Cities or the state of Minnesota at about 8.5%, and that's something relatively new that we have experienced. So we're really watching those employment numbers and trying to stay on top of that. From interviews and retention calls that I've made, it seems that capital equipment and facility expansion upgrades are going to lead the way in our area before employment really comes back. People are trying to make those investments, hang on with as few people as they can, because once they hire a person, then they take that very seriously, that they've, in fact, providing supports to their families and for their livelihood. Housing and commercial properties continue to be very depressed, and we really expect that to continue to impact our economic development success. We are part of the Grow Minnesota program, which many of you may know is a program of retention expansion calls that the Minnesota Chamber really leads. Our community has been involved for 9 years in that program and make about 50 calls a year to all sizes and types of business in our area. We're increasing that this year to 75 willingly as our decision because those calls have become so important to us, keeping our fingers on the pulse of our community. It drives our public policy, and there's still a high degree of uncertainty within our business community. Here's some of the things that we have heard in the past 12 months. Taxes. Business owners used to really complain about taxes. And you know what? They don't do that anymore. What we're hearing is, just keep our taxes the same. Just keep them the same and give us some certainty that we can live with, and we will grow. The bigger concerns right now is on regulations and unintended consequences of actions that the legislature may take. A perfect example of that is the market value homestead credit elimination from last year. And I understand this committee does not dictate over that, but it is something that I get calls on every day. And over the last 6 weeks, we've had numerous presentations for our businesses because they don't understand why their property taxes took a huge jump this year whenever nothing supposedly of great importance or effect happened here at the legislature. So we've been trying to explain that and have welcomed some experts in that area in to talk to our businesses about that. I think absolutely that was an unintended consequence, but those things impact the ability for hiring and the ability for additional investments to a very high degree. I was talking with our local Xcel Energy director at the Sessions Priorities event on Tuesday night. She reported to me that the market value homestead credit elimination will cost Xcel Energy $40 million this year, 1 year, $40 million. That astounded me. So I think that some study and some attention really need to be paid to that action. We need to get energy figured out. Our businesses cannot be successful if they can't keep the lights on. I think that we need to have a willingness to consider all energy options, including opening up discussions again on nuclear energy extension and increase in our Minnesota area. Support the nimbleness of MNSCU. And we cannot adjust quickly enough to the needs of the employers now. The change is incredible. Technology and the educational needs. One of my employers report that just to work on a manufacturing line takes a college-level calculus course for the people that he employs. And he can't find those people. So the increased automation and computerization is getting way out ahead of the people that we have who are willing to take those jobs and run those machines and do that work. There needs to be some adjustment for that. It's essential to match our offerings with the needs of our businesses. I think that our MNSCU presence, particularly in our area, President Joyce Helens of the St. Cloud Technical and Community College and President Earl Potter of St. Cloud State University, have really expressed that willingness in our community, and MNSCU needs to support that willingness and help them with that flexibility. President Potter actually heads our Greater St. Cloud Development Corporation, which is a new privately driven economic development corporation. 70 of our lead companies have put in $7,500 apiece, a new hire, and they're all stepping up to the plate to provide the leadership to really pursue economic development in a way that it never has been in central Minnesota. So we need to support that kind of initiative through our university systems as well as economic development initiatives. I'm also convinced that Chancellor Stephen Rosenstone is going to be a dynamic innovator in that area. I might mention we currently are pursuing an out-of-state company with 300 new jobs that would come into our state, and it's very close to being a done deal. So this stuff works, and supports for that kind of initiative is important. I have the microphone, so I have to tell you, the importance of bonding is supreme. And this is a bonding year, and I am a good conservative business person. I support as much bonding as you can get out there, get these people working, and give our communities the necessary assets to help drive the economic development we have. Many of you, I've talked to you about the St. Cloud Civic Center. We are two-thirds of the way done with that project. We funded two-thirds of it ourselves. It's sitting there ready to go, and we need our one-third, not half, one-third is all we need, $10 million to finish that. We are booking that full every weekend. Our Central Minnesota Farm Show, our chamber's biggest revenue builder, is booked. We booked the whole thing this year. 335 booths, last year was 250, and the farmers have more money than ever to spend. We'll welcome 4,000 people at the end of this month, at the end of February, to come in and to spend money with our vendors and spend time in St. Cloud, Minnesota, because we have that facility to support them. And I might mention that last Friday it was announced that the Republican convention statewide will be held there in May. You'll all be able to come and see this. Well, those of you who are Republicans, sorry. You can come too, Senator Metzen. I'll take you to lunch.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we're all welcome.
You're all welcome, yes. You can see that new building. But that was just Friday, because we have the expansion done. We couldn't handle the conference, and I do believe that the Democratic convention is scheduled to be there as well. So all of you will be there in that capacity.
Ms. Bonin, you
not might, at the same time.
You might want to get a security deposit on those conventions.
Oh, all right. I'll take note of that. All right. And just to finish here, we have a brand new building going up on I-94 that you'll see as you drive north to St. Cloud. That is Marco. They're building their new corporate headquarters right in St. Cloud. And that was with, I believe they did get some TIF funding on that, but it is a huge investment in our community. One that could very easily have been moved to the Twin Cities. The healthcare jobs that our first presenter talked about are vitally important. We have a $250 million expansion on our hospital. We don't have enough doctors right now. We have to find a way to get more doctors into Minnesota. We're experiencing six-month waits for just general physicals in our area. So healthcare jobs continue to be important. And there is a big concern about losing jobs. ING, downtown St. Cloud, 400 jobs right now, an estimated 300 to come. And they were just sold to Capital One, who also has a huge company that was purchased in Sioux Falls. And I recently read that Sioux Falls is very excited to potentially welcome 400 new jobs into the area. We don't know that there are jobs. Brian Myers, the lead director at ING locally, says these are two very separate businesses. There is a Capital One new credit company in Sioux Falls, purchased at the same time as the ING group. So we're very nervous about consolidation there and what might happen. Again, the lead person in St. Cloud says that's not going to happen, but sometimes they're the last to know. So we're very concerned about that. We're optimistic, but we still feel a high degree of uncertainty. And I really welcome your willingness to hear these concerns and thank the committee for inviting me to participate.
Thank you, Ms. Bonin. And members, thank you for your patience. I think what I'd like to do, I think Senator Dietzick has had a question. Okay, you're all set. I'd like to get Mr. Hyde's testimony on the table. And then, depending on time, we can allow for some more questions at the end. But just looking at our time constraints, let's move right into that. And Senator Daley, this is your backyard, I think. I don't know if you have any introductory comments for Mr. Hyde, but we had a nice several of us had a nice visit to his facility.
Thank you, Mr.
Late last
Chairman.
Year.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tom Hyde, for taking time out of your busy work schedule to be here with us. We are pleased and honored to have you here. As the recession hit Mr. Hyde's company, aerospace manufacturing, aerospace welding, he was able to unleash the entrepreneurial spirit and innovate, create new products and services to adapt to changing markets. And it's that kind of innovation that we want to continue. as many of us went to hear some of the concerns that he had, at the top of the list, although it may differ a little bit with what Ms. Bonin said, tax structure, tax implications are considerations that businesses still do have. Regulations, permitting processes, healthcare costs, and energy costs are at the top of the list. And without any further ado, Tom will take it away and share with us maybe some of his concerns, some of the success stories. But we're really proud and pleased to have you. Thank you for doing business in Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, fellow senators and committee members for inviting me here today. I'm very honored to be here. I will tell you this is my first time speaking here at the Capitol in front of a committee. But I am very honored to be here to represent small business and especially manufacturing here in Minnesota. I think I can add to both of the presenters some of the topics they touched on, as well as several of the questions you had. I put this together, some notes together late last night to prepare for this. I said my name is Tom Hyde. I am from St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I thank you for your efforts there. My hometown, I went to high school there, just south of St. Cloud on 94 as you drive up there. One of the first industrial parks you'll see has a road called Opportunity Drive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great name for that road. There are several big businesses that have moved in there. I think St. Cloud's done a fantastic job of recruiting those businesses. That area there was kind of a playground at times of mine. It's outside of the landfill that was created there while I was there, and did a lot of dirt bike riding as a teenager in that area. So nice to see that area being developed into some great businesses and manufacturing. I belong to several manufacturing groups here in Minnesota, and I'm here to tell you, and I'll give you several examples, that manufacturing is thriving in Minnesota. We not only manufacture a lot of metal components here ourselves, but we also subcontract out several services, and we are having a hard time getting any of our suppliers to even quote on new jobs because they are too busy to quote for us. I have lived out of state. I moved back to raise my family here in this state. I have three children, so I'd like to give you some information directly from the trenches of manufacturing and small business out there and what it's like to raise two families, as I consider it. My direct family here in Minnesota, I have kids ranging from 13, 16, and one in college here in Roseville at Northwestern, as well as my other family at work. My employees are my family, and I believe all small business owners treat and believe and feel a lot of obligation to their employees. One of the things I want to touch on is our reputation as a state. I travel a lot. I see a lot of other business all over the country, and Minnesota is not well known as business friendly. Kind of just the opposite, unfortunately, and I hope we can change that. All right, we have two companies, as Mr. Senator Daley mentioned. We have Aerospace Welding, which was our first company we started in 1993. We are an FAA repair station and manufacturing company servicing small aircraft and business-type jets from all over the world. We started out in a very small building down in Burnsville, about four employees in 1993, and we have moved five times over the last 18 years because we've always outgrown our building that we were in, and we have gone from renting to owning two different properties, one in Burnsville, which I was fortunate enough to recently sell after having it on the market for 4 years recently. And we moved from Burnsville after having four locations there to 3 years ago, moving to Eagan, and now we're in 35,000 square feet. In 1996, then we started our manufacturing division, which is aerospace manufacturing. And we service everything from very small light aircraft, which are used a lot of the universities to train our airline pilots and corporate pilots from all over the world. We have customers literally in every country all over the world. So we export an awful lot. We ship overseas every day, and we ship virtually to every state in the union. That is our repair station side. Our manufacturing started in 1996. We have grown dramatically since then. Our biggest customer back then and one of our biggest customers today is Sears Aircraft up in Duluth, Minnesota. We have been with them from the very beginning of their early development stages and have grown with them. Back in 2008, October of 08, when we took the big hits of economic downturn, just to give you a scale or an example, Cirrus was building 16 airplanes a week, four passenger aircraft, which is they were and still remain the largest provider of that size of aircraft in the world. They have done a tremendous job up there. But they went from 16 airplanes a week, which is one of our biggest customers, to literally nothing for 6 months. Due to the inventory that they had built up in the dramatic downturn, they have built back where they are currently building for the last year, year and a half, approximately five airplanes per week. So it was a dramatic impact to us. But during those times, being a conservative businessman, growing up on a farm in Minnesota, we reinvested back into our company, gained several new certifications, which have allowed us to bring in business from GE Aviation, who manufactures all the large engines for Boeing and Airbus, as well as the military, Lockheed Martin, Goodrich Aerospace, and many other manufacturers. Next week, we have, next Wednesday, we have a brand new, very large international company coming out of Rockville, Illinois, BE Aerospace, to visit us. And they just were the winner of an $800 million contract, and they have many products that we will hopefully be able to manufacture for them. They are looking for a metal manufacturing company to help build components for them. They'll be visiting us next Wednesday, and we hope to bring some of that business here to Minnesota and create more jobs. Want to touch on, we grew our manufacturing company last year in 08. We were doing very well in 07, 08 and growing every year. We took the downturn in 09. In 010, our manufacturing company grew back 23%. In 2011, this past year, we grew another 62%. We have a pipeline of business and that we have worked hard for and new businesses that we are in touch with to bring more business here, manufacturing jobs in Minnesota, that we plan on doing that much or more again this year. I'll touch on a little bit about jobs and the unemployment out there and give you a few real stories. My kids have started to grow a little bit. My wife, fortunately, has been a stay-at-home wife. She is college-educated. Did have a career, but then when we decided to have kids, decided to stay home with them, and it's been fantastic. But she decided she wanted to go look for a part-time job because they're old enough to kind of take care of themselves. So she went on Craigslist this past year and was amazed at the amount of manufacturing job listings she saw on Craigslist, and she was telling me about it. And I said, well, the reason there's so many on there is because it's they are on there for over and over because they can't find the people they're looking for. I experienced something similar with Craigslist. We are now looking for six or seven new people here at the beginning of 2012. And we put a CNC machinist job on Craigslist, and within 3 hours, we are already down to number 47. So there are a lot of manufacturing jobs out there, and everybody I talk to is looking to hire and does have openings. Now I'll touch on one of the areas as to why I think they are not finding those candidates. I have four main areas I would like to bring up today as to, from a small businessman, what can Minnesota government do for us. The first one is property taxes. Although I'm not here to complain about my property taxes, I would like to see some stability. My property value, I purchased a $2.7 million facility in Eagan back in the spring of 08, and the value on that building today is about $2 million. We haven't walked away from our obligation. We pay our mortgage every month. But my property taxes continue to go up, even though my value has dropped by 30%. doesn't seem to be too hard to figure out the math. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So that is my one tidbit on taxes and property taxes. My next topic is section Tax Code Section 179. Like many small businesses who are growing, we try to reinvest back into our company and add new equipment and continue to try and stay ahead competitively on technology. Over the last 3 months, we've added $200,000 worth of new equipment to our facility for expansion in the coming years. The federal government lets us know what the rules are at the beginning of every year, and a lot of times they give us rules for 2 or maybe even 3 years under the tax code, so we can plan and we can save our money and we can leverage and borrow accordingly for growth to reinvest back into new equipment, and we know what the tax codes are. I've got caught more than once where I was told and felt like by my advisors that the state of Minnesota would follow suit with the same limits in which the federal government was for that year, only to find out in December at the end of the year after I spent the money that the state of Minnesota was not going to follow along and was going to be much, much lower limit than the federal government. I would like to propose that the state of Minnesota would let us know what the rules are in the beginning of the year and not at the end of the year after the year is already done and gone. This is a big hardship to us, and we would, in all likelihood, I believe, businesses would spend more on capital improvements if we knew what the rules were. We would plan and budget and finance accordingly, and I believe this would create more jobs. And the next topic is a proposal by the federal government. This is something that I'm reaching out to all of you to help influence our federal senators and congressmen from Minnesota. This will have a dramatic impact on our businesses and jobs if this is passed. For the last couple of years, and it seems to be a hot topic again, the federal government is proposing to impose landing fees on all aircraft of all types, $100 every time they land somewhere. And I understand the federal government has budget issues, and trying to fund airports is a big budget issue. But if that is passed, it will have a dramatic, even a more dramatic impact on our industry and our business and our customers, and will definitely cost us jobs if that is passed. The next thing I would like to talk about is our pool for employees and education. As I mentioned, I have a daughter in a four-year college. She is a double major. She is going into teaching. But we are having an extremely difficult, as I know many other manufacturers out there, are having an extremely hard time finding the employees they need. They do have jobs, but the schools going all the way back, I want to go all the way back to the high schools. When I was in high school, St. Cloud Tech, as I think it still does today, had a very good automotive department. Industrial arts, woodworking, they promoted these trades. The schools over the years have closed their industrial arts department, or at least reduced them dramatically, and it seems like they promote a lot more. A four-year college education as being the only way to have a good career. There are great jobs out there in the trade industry. Good-paying jobs and jobs out there today in the future. We find that a lot of the tech schools, local ones here in Minnesota, have closed their welding departments, their CNC machining departments. They don't offer these classes anymore, and we are losing that pool where which we draw from to get our employees. A lot of the people, back when the economy downturned, a lot of manufacturing jobs were going to China. And we believe that with all the layoffs that happened and the state offering re-education money, people went back and got re-educated in an entirely different field, and now manufacturing jobs are coming back, and we are becoming more competitive with China because of what's going on there. But the pool isn't there because the people that were there before got re-educated into a different career field, and the tech schools as well as high schools are not promoting the trades as much as they used to. I would like to ask that all senators and representatives go out to their districts, visit the high schools, the counselors, to see what we can do about talking to the students and educating them that there is a good career path out there in manufacturing and in the trade industry. So we need to get the word out. President Obama talked about this on Tuesday, about trying to bring back the manufacturing jobs. And in order to do that, just like any campaign, you need to get grassroots. You need to get out to the high schools and start there, where young people are making decisions and career paths. And we need to get to the high schools and help promote the trade industry so we have a pool to continue to grow. No one's going to be able to continue to grow, and we do have jobs out there, and we are growing, and we are working hard to bring more jobs here. But if we do not have a pool of employees locally, we will all have to go elsewhere in order to find those employees, and jobs will leave Minnesota because of it. Thank you for your time here today, and I appreciate your service to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde and Ms. Bonin. And we've got a little time for a few questions. And I guess a couple comments from the chair. You both mentioned property taxes. Property taxes matter. I guess what continues to be impressed upon me is that property taxes matter for small business, for job creation. And all I can say is please watch. This committee will act on business property taxes next week. But we'll need your help, because it's a long way from here to the governor's desk. We started with something last year that included a reduction and actually a repeal, a phase out of the statewide business property tax, and that was vetoed. So that's not a good result. We need to get that to a better conclusion for all of you and what you're trying to do and for what your members are trying to do. So number one, property taxes matter. Number two, certainty. Ms. Bonin, I think you used that word, and I think that was a big part of what you said too, Mr. Hyde, in that government at all levels has created a lot of uncertainty for you and your businesses, changing rules, changing regulations. Instead of investing and doing what you want to do to grow, you're looking over your shoulder, waiting for what's the next new rule or mandate coming down from government. So starting next week, this committee will act on that as well. We will act on regulatory relief. We will try to give you some more certainty. So I hope this is just the beginning. I've got a number of members who have some questions or comments. Being mindful of our time, Senator DeCrieff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. welcome to the committee, Mr. Hyde. I believe we also share something else in common. I think you're one of my constituents currently, and I really do appreciate you taking the time, and I admire your entrepreneurial spirit. It's something that that we share somewhat, I totally identify with your four items here. Education is one thing that I think is key. It seems to what you're saying about education is there's a group of people that were employed in the manufacturing business who have now been retrained and probably aren't interested in going back to the manufacturing sector again. We do still have high levels of unemployment here in Minnesota, and I would like to try to find a better way to see how can we get those folks back into the manufacturing field where they're really needed. Maybe the people that were there got retrained don't want to go back. But what can we do? I share your concern about starting in the high schools and talking with students, but that's a concern, and it seems like we're not making any headway there. I've talked to folks about it as well, so I'm looking for some insight on what can we do. And my second question there is, you mentioned that in your travels, Minnesota has gained a reputation of being unfriendly in our business climate. In your opinion, what can we do to change that reputation that we may have gained?
Well, thank you, sir.
Mr. Hyde, you want to take a first shot at that?
Sure. Yes, as far as the reputation, we are known out there for high taxes. We absolutely are. We are, lack of a better term, known as a welfare state and not a pro-business state. How can we change that? I think we need to have some incentives for businesses to create jobs, stay here, and have a reason to move here. Both South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, all our bordering states seem to be very proactive in trying to take our businesses and move them to their states. How are they doing it? I think we can, you know, look at what they are doing and replicate. As far as the jobs themselves, there is a lack of skilled workers out there for manufacturing. I hear it from a lot of manufacturer owners and managers. They are looking for people and are having a hard time finding them. But I'm not talking just manufacturing. I spent 3 months trying to find someone just simply for shipping and receiving who even had the right skill set, who had an interest of coming off their unemployment because they had another 6 months of unemployment they could draw from. They didn't have a lot of ambition to come back to work. But going back to the high schools and starting grassroots there, I think, is a big point. Educating people that there is a future out there, there is a good path that they can go to, two-year school, and they can be out in the workforce or earning, you know, $20-some an hour. A lot of them want to run computers, and we understand that. As you mentioned earlier, a lot of the equipment out there is computer-driven and robotic. It is sophisticated. It just isn't being explained to them and educating them. And I don't know the economics of and what the state is doing to help four-year colleges versus what they're doing financially, if anything, to help the trade schools. I just know several of them have dropped their programs. A supplier of ours, a family-run machine shop in Faribault, has drawn from the tech school down there for years for CNC machinists. I was down there in October, and he was getting the last three he's ever going to get because that was the end of their program. They closed it. I don't know the financial reasons as why they closed it. I'm not sure if we can, like I said, I don't know what the state does for four-year colleges financially versus as well as students and what they offer for packages, for loans and things for the students there versus a trade school. Maybe it's the same. I am not sure. If it is not, we need to get it to be the same. So I think getting out to the high schools and making sure that we're on even ground will help a lot and go a long ways.
I don't know if Ms. Bonin, you had a comment maybe related to the higher education piece of that, but
I would just add that I think, yes, in other circles and when you travel, I'm thinking of the chamber environment nationwide. I would say that Mr. Hyde's comments are correct, but then you go out and you talk to our employers and you hear how great the work ethic is and how wonderful the people are who they employ and how your workers are like family. The other thing is we've got a great quality of life here, and there's that recognition that to gain that quality of life, there's some payoff in the other end. I don't want you all to get the wrong idea from my statement that people are saying the taxes, you know, the taxes aren't important. They are vitally important, but there's a recognition that the regulation piece and the certainty and stability is as important as not increasing taxes and decreasing taxes.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Mr. Hyde and Ms. Bonin, thank you for your time this morning. Thanks for what you're doing to employ and grow jobs. And please keep an eye on what we are doing and share your comments with the tax committee.